Ahau buju in Dinwe Maganadok. Ani Nishim Koyek and Dishnakas, Bodwe Wadami, Odawa and Dao, Nodawa Zibi, Nyuk and Deben Dagwis, Muskegon and Doch Bia, Mko Oendodum, Ahau Iu Migwich. So I chose this morning to start with a traditional protocol greeting because I'm going to share some American Indian insights, and you'll hear me respond a lot of times about myself as an American Indian, which I'll get to that. I know there's folks that will use the word indigenous, native. I'm not telling you you're wrong, but there's a method to my reasoning with referring to myself as an American Indian. Good morning. My name is Rob Larson. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. I won't spend a whole lot of time on my bio because we only have a limited time, but I'm a professor at Grand Valley. My background, I'm professionally trained in natural resource management. I'm also a tribal citizen with Nottawasippi here on Potawatomi. And so with my professional background and looking at our cultural teachings, I do a lot with trying to integrate and mesh the two. I've only been recapturing our teachings, my heritage, about the last 10 years. I've been a tribal member since 2003. But our family grew up disconnected from our teachings in our community due to about 250 years of negative federal Indian policy. So I'm still learning, but I'm going to share some aspects of what I have learned with you this morning. We're going to reference Robin Wall Kimmerer. So if you've read Braiding Sweetgrass, I also forwarded a chapter to Brad on learning the grammar of animacy, which I'm going to briefly touch on. But if you've read that, or you've read Braiding Sweetgrass, like, there's a lot of good insight. So I'm going to share some of that with you this morning. One of the things I want to preference, though, is I'm not up here to speak for all Native people or American Indian people. These are my perspectives. I'm not speaking on behalf of my tribe. These are just insights and perspectives that I believe the Creator has given to me. So with that in mind, we'll jump into it. So this morning I'm talking about acknowledging the land, connection versus disconnection. And I've spent a lot of time at Grand Valley recently talking about land acknowledgments, because if you don't know what land acknowledgments are, they're this new, hip, trendy thing where organizations especially are making land acknowledgments to kind of like pay some respect, show some penance for the land that was taken from my ancestors. So it usually is, we acknowledge that this, like Grand Valley would say, we acknowledge that the university is sitting on unceded land of the peoples of the Three Fire, the Ojibwe, the Odawa, and Bodwe Wadami or Potawatomi people. You know, these things are great, but as I stopped and I was pondering this, I'm like, there's got to be more to this, because a lot of times we have the right intentions, we say the right things, but there has to be some application of this. And as I was looking at, like, how would my ancestors think about this? The ones that were affected by the negative federal Indian policy, or the ones that were here before the settlers came from a distant land. And as I stopped and I pondered this, I think that the emphasis would be on acknowledging the land. And I'm going to say that in quotation marks, because in our pre-talk, that was one of the questions I asked. I was like, what does the land mean to you? Or how would you define land? And I think if we surveyed people across this room, we would see that it's different for everybody. Some people might say it's my house, my yard. I have my nice garden, my birdhouses, bird feeders. It's a place that I'm safe or my family dwells. Other people might say it's where I go out deer hunting. And I'm engaging and I'm in the silence and I get the privilege of harvesting this animal to provide sustenance. Both of those, neither one of them are right or wrong. It's going to be different for each and every person. But I think as we look at this concept of the land, that there's more that we can get to. As we look at the land, or my perspective on the land is, it's spiritual just as much as it is material. If I look at the history, or if I look at what the land meant to my people, they didn't have Home Depot. They didn't have Amazon, right? They didn't have Walgreens. They didn't have Myers or Walmart. Everything that they depended upon came from the land. And a lot of times when we look at the land, we walk out, we grab a handful of dirt, and we're like, ah, I have the land. But the land is so much more. It's this idea, this concept, this spiritual being, if you will, that just like it provided the sustenance, the life needs, the life requisites for my ancestors, it does the same for us. But I think we've forgotten that because everything that we do a lot of things to separate ourselves from the land. You'll hear me refer to, and I know you've talked about this in here, you've a lot of people will refer to the land as Mother Earth, which is awesome. I tend to refer to her as Gokmiskinan, our grandmother Earth, because she's been here a long time. She has this wisdom that we haven't even begun to scratch the surface on. She has this wisdom that if we will stop and we'll listen, we try to reconnect or connect maybe for the first time, like it could be life-changing. I look at the mental health issues that we're having in our society, the sickness, the cancer epidemics, all these things that are running rampant, and I can't help but wonder, is it because we're not as connected to Gokmiskinan as we think we are? We live in houses that are raised up off the ground when it doesn't matter if it was American Indian people or you look at other tribal communities around the world. Where do the people live? They usually live right on the earth. Our shoes, and I'm guilty of it too. You know, I have a pair of Adidas's on. We put rubber insulators on the bottom of our feet, which, what happens? It breaks the connection. Our grandmother Earth has this energy, this life, not just like providing wood or providing food through berries or meat, but there's this spiritual connection that we're required to have that I think we get in the daily grind that we got to build our little empires. We got to have this nice house. We got to have the latest and greatest car. And I'm not saying everybody's like this, but this tends to be like the overarching model for success in our society. So as we look at this, I'm going to ask you to go forward and ponder what the land means to you. And when I look at the land, it's this collective being that spiritual material, but it also is the collective of all the other beings. If you happen to have read Learning the Grammar of Animacy, which is in Brady and Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, one of the things I want to encourage you, Robin Wall Kimmerer is a fellow citizen Potawatomi tribal elder and a respected scientist. But there's a lot of good wisdom in that book. But a lot of people get hung up on the fact and they put up this barrier on themselves that say, you know, oh, this is native wisdom. This is native teaching. This doesn't apply to me. And I personally had the privilege of meeting Robin last year and having lunch with her while she was at Grand Valley. And I could tell you that is not the intention of that book. Not that I want to speak for her, but I can tell you the wisdom and the knowledge that she's sharing is for everybody to pick up. And so this is kind of giving you a hint where I'm going to go with why I refer to myself as an American Indian and not Native or Indigenous. But I want you to, as you stop and think about this, or you read Brady Sweetgrass, don't get caught up on, well, I don't check the box, the AI box for American Indian. Because what we're talking about is a matter of life and death for each and every person, including me, other American Indians, people across the world. We have to reframe our thinking and become more mindful on how we actually acknowledge the land. So in Learning the Grammar of Animacy, the highlight, the takeaway that I want you to get from this is that, and I don't know if we, I wish I should have brought this model with me, but a lot of times we have this pinnacle of this pyramid, and where do we plop humans? Right at the top of the pyramid, and everybody else is below us. The trees are below us, the animals are all below us because we're highly evolved. We could think, we could talk, we can communicate with each other, we know what's best. That is ego. Like, here's what I'll tell you. I'll give you a little bit on my insight or a little bit on my background. So I told you I spent about the last 10 years reconnecting with my culture, that we grew up disconnected. Before that, I spent 40 years in the church, even working towards ordination. And the thing that I've studied across all the major religions, including Anishinaabe teachings, evolution fits into this. Humans are the last beings to show up on the planet. The very last one. That is the common connector between all these belief structures. And if that is the case, why are we not humble enough to realize for the youngest beings on the planet, everybody else has a lot more wisdom to share and give with us, give to us. But yet we don't think that because, and this is what the crux of learning the grammar of animacy is, that just because something doesn't look, think, feel, act, move like a human, it's beneath us. But it's not. If we look at the trees, you know, we heard that awesome meditation about the trees. The trees are these big old carbon banks which are saving us right now. But yet we mindlessly think, we're going to cut them down. Now, there's a balance there, which I don't want to tip over, and we don't have a whole lot of time to explore this, but we still need the trees because trees are things made out of wood are better than things made out of plastic. And so don't take, like, oh, we got to save every single tree. There's a lot more to unpack on that we don't have time to consider. But the big takeaway is just because a tree is in its firm place and it's not doing the human things doesn't mean that it doesn't have the inherent rights of personhood that we do. And that there's things going on. And here's the awesome part about looking at it through the indigenous lens and the Western science lens. Science is now proving trees communicate through pheromones and stuff to other trees when they're under attack. And if you look at most trees in an area, when it's time to produce their fruit or their seeds, acorns or walnuts, if there's other trees in there, they all mast at the same time. And so looking at those logics and theories, there's got to be communication there, but we oftentimes discount it because it's not humanized. And so as you go forward and you consider what the land is, I would encourage you to start looking through the lens at other beings on this planet, not as its, but as beings that have inherent rights of personhood, just like you. And as we consider what the land is, we also have to look at the water. Robin uses a term in Learning the Grammar of Animacy called Yahweh. It's ironic, when I studied the Bible, that word showed up too. And in the Bible, it said, I am. But in Anishinaabe teachings, the word Yahweh means to be. I visit Sleeping Bear Dunes quite a bit, and I stand there at the bay at the end of the Platte River, and I've stopped to consider, because Robin talks about Yahweh a bay, or to be a bay. Like, have we considered what that means? What does it mean to be that bay, or what does it mean to be that tree? Like, we don't stop to think about things on this level as humans. And I would encourage you that as you go forward, it's easy to get in your daily grind. You run to the coffee shop, you get your coffee, you might be listening to the radio or you're chatting with somebody on the phone. We tend to go through things on autopilot. And so as we look at acknowledging the land, it calls us to come back to be mindful and to be aware, more aware in the world. So taken away from learning the grammar of animacy, that we're starting to give this human perspective, or we're humanizing, giving inherent rights of personhood to these beings. I would encourage you that as you start framing in your concept of what the land is, the best illustration that I've come up with is a spider web. Who loves spiders? I like participation, right? Look at the rat. There's a lot of people that don't have their hands out, and that's okay. But I would encourage you, so I'm a huge fan of Walt Whitman. He coined the phrase, be curious, not judgmental. That's how I would encourage you to go through life. So even those that didn't raise their hand, they're like, I don't like spiders. You know, you might say that about snakes, Start approaching the world with some curiosity versus judgment. And I'm not saying you're mindfully judging, but at some level, if we don't approach things with curiosity or we have our guard up, I'm not telling you got to walk up and grab little spider and start patting him, being like, hey, buddy. But we need to approach things with curiosity. But if we can grasp the concept of looking at the land as a web, and when I look at this description, if we think about spider webs, they're sturdy, but they're flexible. They help the spider thrive. Everything that lands in the web is for the spider's benefit, and it thrives. But also, there's connection. But also, the web is fragile. You start breaking a strand or two strands, what happens to the web? Boom, it collapses. And it's no longer allowing the spider to thrive. And hopefully, the spider is able to rebuild the web. But if we'll grasp this concept that the land or the world is like that, it sets us up for changing our perspective. Because one of the things that I see about the spider's web is every strand in that web that represents Earth is a different being on the planet. One strand's an oak tree. One strand is a spider. One strand's a snake or a fish or a turtle. One strand is a human. Don't get caught up on thinking. So a lot of times I'll put this illustration up in one of the classes I teach, and I'll ask my students, now define what the spider is. I just told you, humans are one strand in the web of life. We're not the spider on the web. What's the spider? And that's the question you have to answer for yourself. I'm not going to tell you. For me, I think it's life as a whole. I think it's the way the Creator intended it to be, that life thrives and everything ends up in the web for the benefit, for the greater benefit of life. It isn't just for one being to benefit, but life as a whole thrives. So I'm going to draw you to your attention to the first quote that I put in the sheet. So I'm a huge Robin Wall Kimmerer fan. I'm a huge Eldo Leopold fan. If you haven't read a Sand County Almanac, it's an easy read. And if you've read Braiding Sweetgrass, it's a good read to parallel the two. Because, so Leopold's a traditional, trained, classic scientist. The book was published in 1949. But I think his wisdom in that book is just as relevant today as it was back then, if not more relevant. But a lot of times, if you look at his writings between Robin Wall Kimmerer, there's a lot of parallels between the two. But Leopold, in his chapter in The Good Oak, says there's two spiritual dangers in not owning a farm. One danger is supposing that breakfast comes from the grocery, and the other is heat comes from the furnace. Now, as we stop and ponder that, have we stopped to consider where all the things that come that we have in our life come from? They say we're more connected than any time in history because of this right here, right? You can't even go out to eat anymore. People don't even interact. And they're like sitting across from each other. I don't know if they're texting to each other. We don't talk anymore. We're just going to text. But we can reach out and we can connect with somebody anytime, anywhere on the planet. You don't have long distance charges. So I'll be 50 this year. And I remember like having to like, hey, can I have permission to make a long distance call? No, you can't because it's too expensive. But now we can call across the world or text because they say we're more connected than ever. I disagree with that. The connection I'm speaking of is on a lot deeper level. We might have the power to reach out and communicate, but do we really know who we're communicating with? I think back to Leave It to Beaver, I Love Lucy days, the stories from my grandparents. They were probably more connected with their neighbors than they were their family. How many of us, you don't have to raise your hand on this, but how many of us know our neighbors anymore? I mean, I've made it a point to try and reconnect with my neighbors. But most people, we stay isolated in our own little world because we're on such a tight schedule running here, there, and everywhere. Now I'm going to level this. So that's the community aspect that we're not probably as connected as we think we are. But Think about all the things in your life right now. Are you really connected to your phone? I own my phone. I paid a lot of money for it. But have I stopped to consider where the glass came from, where the circuit board came from, the metal for the housing, and all the different components that allow me to reach out and connect with someone? Have you considered where the lithium came from in your battery? Has anybody seen a lithium mine in an image? You need to Google it. And a lot of times they end up in marginalized communities. But I got my latest and greatest iPhone. Maybe some people are like, hey, I didn't want a new iPhone, but I can't update it anymore. Apple claims to be a green company, but they do this thing called planned obsolescence, where eventually you can't update, so guess what? You got to buy. I would encourage you to stop and look at that level of connection with everything in your life, from your TV to your tennis shoes to your phone to your car. Now, I'm not saying that you can't have things, but I wonder if we would be more mindful if we stop to consider the connection, the impact. I'm going to introduce a concept that me and a colleague of mine at Grand Valley came up with, because I want to start speaking about connection versus disconnection. Even though they say we're more connected, like I said, I don't really think we are. I think we live in a constant state of disconnection. Disconnection with each other, because we're not really as connected as we think so, because everything's virtualized now. I mean, there's still folks, and when I say that, like, I'm not putting everybody in that category. I know there's folks that are making efforts and stuff. But we're disconnected, which leads to disrespect, intentional and unintentional, which leads to destruction. And as I look at this framework of those three D's, disconnection leads to intentional, unintentional disrespect, which leads to intentional, unintentional destruction. Most of us, how many people have seen the garbage that people empty their car in, like, Walmart or Meijer's parking lot? Makes me mad every time. Most of us aren't going to be that kind of person. We're not going to empty our garbage in the parking lot at the store, right? That would be an example. Because we're disconnected, we intentionally disrespect. But we do a lot of other things that we don't, when we don't stop and weigh the impact of what we're doing, the decisions that we make on a daily basis, we unintentionally disrespect. Now, I hope you hear what I'm really trying to get at, is I'm not here to beat you up this morning, because I still am a work in progress, okay? And anything we do to inch the line forward is progress. Anytime that we become more mindful, we inch the line forward. But do we stop and realize that plastic has become a pandemic in our world? It really has. If you don't know, the studies are saying we eat a credit card size amount of plastic a week. How many people would pull their debit card out and start chowing? I wouldn't want to, but yet, because plastic continues to break down and doesn't really degrade, science is showing that it's in everything. But yet, we go to the store. Are we conscious about the things we're buying? Do we remember to buy or bring with us recycle bags? Or is it easier just to mindlessly grab the plastic bags? These are examples of unintentional disrespect. And I think if we realize the spiritual and material connection that people on this planet once had with the natural world, I wonder if it wouldn't change our framework a little bit. But we don't want to stay there, because if we focus on this, on all the impacts that we're having, and like, woe is me, I'm never going to get away from plastic. Like, that's pretty depressing, right? I mean, we don't want to stay in that spot. My encouragement to you this morning is that we would flip the script and figure out that reconnection leads to intentional, unintentional respect, which leads to restoration or healing. And so if we could find ways to reconnect, we could flip the script. Think about it. As you get to know somebody, it starts with a simple introduction. Now, I'm not telling you to go in the forest and shake a tree's hand, okay? I mean, you might want to, but as you get to know these beings, like if you walk into, if you start looking at the trees in your yard and you learn that they're maple trees and what they need to survive and thrive and stuff, you start building a relationship. That tree will get to know you, and it will change your interactions the way you're doing in your yard. Let's see here. I'm going to bring this home here because I'm running out of time. This really speaks to self-accountability. If we want to see change in the world, it has to start internally. Not to say that, you know, we had a great conversation this morning that talked about, you know, that we need a balance of self-accountability, but we also need some outside activism. I agree with that. But the biggest change will happen when we make conscious changes in our own life to become mindful of our actions and realize that everything we do in the world has implications. Uncle Ben in the movie Spider-Man said, "With great power comes great responsibility." When we walk to the refrigerator to pull out food, we've set off a chain reaction of events. It goes all the way back to the grocery store where you bought it, how that product was packaged, how it was produced, where it was sourced from. Do we stop to think about that level of thinking that one action, walk into the refrigerator, boom, is set up a chain reaction? Every footstep that we make in the world, today I've only put in 1,800 steps, but what chain reaction had those 1,800 steps set off? That is the level of thinking and accountability that we need to have, which hopefully will drive us to applications like becoming aware of the issues that are in our world, that plastics is an issue, that carbon's an issue. But here's the thing. We need this holistic thinking that every decision we make has trade-offs. I know there's a lot of people that say green initiatives are the answer to our global warming issue. Yes, there's some truth to it, but what are the trade-offs? If you've never seen a lithium mine and you realize they're in marginalized communities, you might think twice. My encouragement to you this morning is you stop and think about your consumption. We have to find a way to reduce our consumption, which is not the thing that Americans want to hear. It's easy to just go on autopilot and not think about ways to reduce the things we're consuming. With great power comes great responsibility. When I evaluate my consumption and I figure out ways to reduce it, or I change the way that I'm using things in this world, it sets off a chain reaction. Because if I'm not buying and I build relationships with other people and they stop buying certain things, it's going to trigger the manufacturers to stop producing or stop producing at the rate that they are. This is where I'm going to bring it home. Robin says that for all of us, becoming indigenous to a place means living as if your children's future mattered, to take care of the land as if our lives, both material and spiritual, depended upon it. Listen to the words she's saying. For all of us becoming indigenous to a place, doesn't say for all of us becoming American Indian. Doesn't say if I got this color skin or this DNA. We got to take the DNA equation out of it, take the category down, and realize that our lives, both material and spiritual, depend upon this connection with our grandmother, with the other beings, that they have so much to teach us. And if we think about, there's this concept in Anishinaabe teaching, the seven generations viewpoint. I'm in the middle, three generations forward, three generations back. If I make decisions that are beneficial for the next three generations to come, I've just taken care of myself and I've honored my ancestors before. But it's like a chain. It repeats itself. Eventually, I'll be in the three generations back, so it's a never-ending process. So my encouragement to you is increase your awareness and your mindfulness. Realize that your actions set up a chain reaction of events, and build relationships with humans and non-humans. Miigwech, or thank you.